Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:17 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 3rd, and it was a particularly eventful day following the events over the weekend, where the Trump-Xi confab resulted in lots of smiles all around, a commitment to continue to talk, a brief hiatus in the schedule of imposing tariffs, and some enthusiasm from markets, at least initially, that the relations between these two major trading blocks are beginning to thaw. Well, if we start off and look at how things kicked off in Asia this morning, the A-share market in China was up, but not enough to push up into the overhead trading range. So certainly it was in positive territory. It was up a couple of percent, but it needs to do more. It certainly needs to follow through on the upside in here to really push up into the overhead trading range and break the sequence of lower rally highs. Now, when we look at the banking sector, I've been highlighting for a while now that I do think that this is a manufactured uptrend. It's the clearest evidence that the Chinese administration are at least supporting some part of the banking sector. We can easily define that as the listed sector, but then, of course, that's not reflective of where all the trouble is. The trouble is in the unlisted sector, but certainly they're supporting the banking sector right now. Then when we look at the H-share index, well, then it has also rallied in here today, up another 260 points, and it is now testing this 11,000 level. So this is the first area of potential resistance. And, well, we can see that there is a very short-term overbought condition right now. So this is a bit of a Rubicon. Whether it is going to push up and through this 11,000 level is a rather big arbiter of whether we have seen short-term steadying, or whether this is going to do enough to push back above the trend mean. Well, if we then just skip over the Pacific and look at what's going on Wall Street, we've got a very similar situation. The S&P 500 was up 30 points in here today, so up in excess of 1%. But what it needs to do is follow through on the upside tomorrow, and it has replaced a short-term oversold condition with a short-term overbought condition. So there is the potential here that we're going to get at least a pause here. I think the big challenge this week is to hold on to the advance that's already been put in, and let alone to push on to new high ground. I think that's almost a bit of an ask. It would really require a return to real bullish territory in order to do that right away. But there is certainly a whiff of risk on in here. That there are two, I think, rather important statistics that I've seen in being quoted over the course of the last few days. The first one is that the most shares are in negative territory for the year since something like, it's either 1901 or 1910. So that will tell us that there has been a lot of bad news already priced in, and that the rally we saw last week was the biggest rally that the S&P has put in since the breakout in 2016. Well, it's also interesting that valuations today are just about where they were back in 2016, and that the entire Trump bump has been priced out of valuations. The reason that prices are higher, of course, is because that earnings have broken out along with them. When we look at the corporate profits, then corporate profits have been largely ranging, but they did break out. When we look at this long-term chart, they ranged all the way from about 2012 to 2017 and then broke out. Well, this is updated with a three-month lag, and it's updated on a quarterly basis. So when we look at these figures, that they are reflective of the first half of this year. But corporate profits did break out, and that was after a very lengthy hiatus where valuations had expanded. Well, the faster that corporate profits advance, the greater the potential is that you're going to get valuation contraction, or at least that prices will rise to reflect that corporate profit growth. So the very big question then is the extent to which corporate profit expansion can continue. Well, if we do get a moderation in the the trade war, well, then that would obviously be very good news. It's looking rather unlikely, but one can't entirely rule it out. And certainly we have this hiatus, so that's giving room for markets to rally for at least through the end of the year, because this is also one of the more favorable times of the year. There are a lot of indices are still in negative territory for the year, and there are a lot of asset managers who have got a clear vested interest to try and claim a positive return for the year. So they're And when we look at, for example, the World Equity Index page on Bloomberg, well, for the year, the Dow Jones is up 4.48%. It's about the same for the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ composite is up just under 8%. In currency-adjusted terms, the Brazilian market is up 1%. In real terms, it's up 17%. So that's a clear, I think, reflection of just how much the real had weakened earlier on this year. But we have almost double digit gains for the Eurostoxx 50, the FTSE 100. The DAX is down 11%. The FTSE MIB is down in Italy is down over 10%, and the Chinese market is down 19%. So there is substantial potential for a short covering rally and for a reversion back towards the mean for some of those European indices. They have got potentially a long way to rally before they even approximate the region of their respective trend means. And it is interesting, for example, that with the DAX, it is now that the trend mean approximates the lower side of that overhead trading range. This looks like a completing type 3 formation and has very clear head and shoulder characteristics. So now the big question is whether it can not just simply rally, but can it sustain a move back above that psychological 12,000 level? Then you had, I think it was one of the German members of the ECB saying today that the ECB shouldn't delay with normalizing interest rate policy, but he's obviously not looking at the performance of the German stock market. He's not looking at the performance of the European economy. He's obviously simply looking at the size of debt outstanding. Then when we think about the euro, well, the euro was initially in positive territory in here today, but it gave up the majority of it. The simple fact of the matter is that the Federal Reserve continues to reduce the size of its balance sheet. And even if they do decide to pause in their interest rate hikes, there is, I think, little chance that they're going to arrest the decline in or the pace with which they're reducing the size of the balance sheet. That's, I think, the thing that they want to do most. Rather than raise interest rates, they want to normalize the balance sheet. It's rather questionable just how much they can do that, because they're now holding so many mortgage bonds. If they were to release those mortgages onto the market, then it would represent a very significant source of supply. It would drive up yields, it would drive up mortgage rates, and it would collapse the housing market. So they're heavily reliant on prepayments to reduce that capacity. Or the size of their mortgage holdings. Then, of course, they can't reduce the size of the balance sheet beyond what the total cash requirement of the economy. So I rather think if I start adding up the numbers that there's probably about $500 billion that they can take out of supply from here. And beyond that, they're probably pretty much done. So they probably want to get down to that figure so that they can say that they've normalized policy. And then the mortgage side of the balance sheet will gradually erode as you get prepayments and as mortgages get paid off. But when we think about the headwind that represents for the market, well, there was a significant narrowing in the yield curve spread in here today, that it contracted by 5 basis points. Well, it was only at 20. So This is a significant contraction in the yield curve spread. I did highlight on Friday that we have the TIPS spread. I'd never seen anyone look at it before, so I decided I had better to create it. And what we can definitely see is that the TIPS spread inverted in 2005. Well, that's a very significant lead indicator, not only for the yield curve itself, but also for trouble in the economy. If we then look at the long-term chart of the yield curve, well, it also briefly inverted in 2005, and that was a clear lead indicator for the troubles that we had in 2007. Well, if we look at this historically and examine every single instance, then what we're presented with is a lead indicator for future problems in the economy or recessions that is anything from 6 to 18 months forward. And what we can also say is that if we go back and look at, for example, the performance of the S&P 500 from 2005 until 2007, well, that represented a very clear bullish environment where eventually the pace of the advance picked up. That was representative of people ignoring the signal from contracting credit. I think it's unlikely that people are going to make the same mistake today, because everyone is alert to the yield curve spread. I think one of the reasons why we've had this uptick in volatility, why we've had this longer period of ranging over the course of almost all of this year, is because lots of people are worried about this phenomenon. But the reason that the yield curve spread contracted so violently in here today was because the 10-year yield contracted, and now it is back below 3%. So this has been a meaningful contraction, 20 basis points in November alone, and it is coming back below that 3% level. So that's suggesting that at least a reversion back towards the mean in terms of the government bond price is underway. And when we look at that in terms of the price, well, that this was a meaningful move that we've had in here today. And it is now just about approximating the region of the trend mean. Well, a short-term oversold condition has now been replaced with a short-term overbought condition. The big question from the perspective of anyone who's bullish on bonds is whether the price can push back above the trend mean in here. But what was particularly interesting is, against a background where the longer end of the curve was contracting, then the 2-year yield didn't move at all. So in fact, it was up, and that differential between the two relative measures has had this contractionary effect on the yield curve spread. Well, I think that it is rather inevitable that either the 10-year futures price encounters resistance in the region of the trend mean, or we see an additional rally in the 2-year. When we look at the 2-year future, well, it does look like that it has additional scope to rally here. That it's been ranging right in the region of 105 for the last couple of weeks, and it still has a fairly wide overextension relative to the trend mean. Well, if that starts to get unwound faster than we see an additional rally in the 10-year, then that yield curve spread is going to start widening out again. So I think there's a bit of a delayed reaction on the 2-year to the prognostications that are coming out of the Federal Reserve. When we think about where are we in terms of the big picture, well, we know that credit conditions are contracting. And that's, I think, particularly the case when we continue to keep an eye on these high yield spreads. Well, the potential for very large issuers like the so-called fallen angels, like General Electric and Ford, well, they're going to swell the ranks of the high yield market, and then because their yields are so much higher, well, that's going to have an effect on the measure. So I think the high yield spread market is starting to reflect that phenomenon already, and that's why we're starting to break higher. But of course, it also represents a tightening of credit conditions. And the S&P 500 Banks Index was in barely positive territory in here today. Having rallied in early trading, it wasn't quite able to push back above that 330 area, and that had been an area of resistance in both October and November. So it does need to push back above that level to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, and not least because it approximates the region of the trend mean right now. Well, when we look at the KBW Global Banks Index, let me see if I can find this Global Banks Index. I know that I know what it's called. I can't remember the ticker. Then we can see that this is an index that is reflective of all of the significantly important financial institutions globally. It has been certainly heavily impacted by the deterioration in Europe and indeed in the Chinese banking sector. It has been largely range-bound for approximately 10 years. It failed at the upper side of the range at the beginning of this year, and it continues to trend lower. Well, it does have a short-term oversold condition relative to the trend mean, but it has a lot of work to do in order to break this downtrend. So we know that credit conditions are contracting, and that that is likely to have an effect on the stock market eventually. But I think that considering that we are in a ranging environment here, then as long as these ranges hold on Wall Street, as long as we continue to see a progression of higher reaction lows on the S&P 500, then we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I think it's also worth keeping an eye on what's going on in Australia. The ASX 200 was in positive territory in here today. When we look at the leading advancers, well, you have GrainCorp, you have Bellamy's of Australia and BlueScope Steel. So it's the resources sector primarily that has been doing better. But the financials sector is heavily exposed to the property market, and Sydney and Melbourne property are no longer trending higher. Nonetheless, this has been steadying over the last few weeks, and it does look, I think, likely that it's going to continue to unwind this overextension relative to the trend mean. But 6,000 points on the financials index is now a very large psychological Rubicon. And when we look at the ASX 300, just simply the banks rather than the financials, then what we're presented with is also a pretty consistent downtrend over the course of the last 18 months. So that would also need to sustain a move back above the trend mean. Well, when we look at currencies, the euro obviously has a significant number of challenges that it needs to overcome. And I think that that is something that is probably going to take a serious amount of time. But the Aussie dollar has rallied over the course of the last month to break its sequence of lower rally highs, and now it's testing the region of the trend mean. Well, this is really the big psychological barrier it needs to overcome if we're going to have evidence that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. So what happens over the course of the next few weeks is, I think, going to be rather instructive. With relations with China beginning to thaw, then that's generally positive for the resources sector, and it was up in a dynamic manner in here today. Now the big question is whether it can push back above the trend mean. That's a pretty similar situation for the FTSE 350 mining index. It rallied intraday today to push right up to the region of that progression of lower rally highs in the region of the trend mean. But it needs to do more. It needs to push back above 18,000 to really signal that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And there is a possibility that it can do that. Now, I think when we look at, for example, copper, then we're given a very clear indication of how the market is starting to view this hiatus, that copper prices had originally rallied rather impressively and then gave up the entire advance by the end of the day. It's the exact same situation with soybeans. Soybeans had initially broken out and then gave up most of the advance by the end of the day. Considering the fact that there is African swine flu running rampant in China and increasingly starting to encroach into Europe, well, lean hogs were up on that continuation chart. But if we look at the front month, well, we don't get nearly the same effect. Then if we look at perhaps the second, whoops, I'm not typing particularly effectively there. If we look at the second chart, well, then we're look even going out to the beyond that, maybe a little bit more articulate. The reason that the continuation chart has gapped higher is because of a contract change rather than the fact that the price is in fact rallying. I think that's the clear conclusion that we have here. But what it also suggests is that investors probably need a little bit more convincing when it comes to Chinese demand for key commodities. That certainly we have had a thaw in, or at least a hiatus in terms of the trade war, but I don't think there's a lot of enthusiasm in the commodity markets that everything is going to be plain sailing from here on out, because it's quite unlikely that China is going to agree to the demands that are being placed on it. What we did have news of in here today was that Brent crude rallied by $2.38. That's the And if we look at the rally over the last three sessions, that's the biggest rally we've seen since the beginning of the decline back in October. Well, Alberta is removing 385,000 barrels from supply, so Western Canada Select has bounced, and that was a low in the region of about $13.80. So that really does highlight just how exposed the Canadian supply situation is without a clear avenue to exports beyond the US market, and with a much higher marginal cost of production than other producers, then Canada really is dependent on higher prices to generate profits. So that's a source of supply coming out of the market after what is still a price of approximately $60. If we think historically, then that's not an especially low price. But there is the potential that both Saudi Arabia and Russia will start to pull in some supply. So we have a low of at least short-term significance now in oil prices. Now the big question is, if we do get a reversion back towards the mean, and I think that that's an increasingly likely situation, then the big question is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move back above $70. Considering just how oversold the market is, then there is certainly scope for a reversionary rally. But then the big question is whether it's going to be able to hold the lows on a subsequent retest. So there certainly it looks quite likely that at least a period of support building is going to be required in order to support a view that oil prices are capable of sustaining a move above $70. And natural gas prices have been ranging for much of the last few weeks, and there's a very clear triangular pattern evolving here. So the breakout, when it comes, is going to be very powerful. And considering that $5 is the upper side of what it is an evolving long-term base formation, then the potential is that if it can clear the $5 area, we could have a very meaningful move up towards the peak set in 2014. If it falls back below $4, well, then the price could fall easily back below $3. So there is a rather polarized view of the market right now, the longer that it ranges in this level. Now, when we think about the outlook for the dollar, I continue to see that people are bearish. The reality is that it has bounced from the region of the trend mean, and it has so far held the breakout to to new highs or new recovery highs, and a sustained move below the trend mean would really be required to question that this isn't still an expansionary environment. Well, the Indian rupee weakened in here today with the strength in the oil price, and it is worth highlighting that that was right in the region of the trend mean, so it's a natural area where we might anticipate some resistance starting to come in. Well, the Nifty index, which had been able to push back above the trend mean, was relatively unchanged in here today, and it is a little overbought in the short term, whereas we did see other markets starting to push up and out of their ranges. But again, we do have short-term overbought conditions in a significant number of these markets. So I think we are due for some consolidation. The Thai market was one of the more impressive on the upside, and it is now coming back up towards the region of the trend mean, having bounced from the upper side of that underlying almost four-year range. So I do believe that there is some room for optimism here, that we are going to get an additional rally, but I think we're probably due a little pause as investors start to take stock, considering that we've had a very powerful rally underway for the last five or six sessions. So I think that is perhaps the most likely scenario. But the big question, I think, is going to be from these very large companies that have led the advance so far. Amazon, having pulled back by just about $600 from the peak in September, has now rallied over $400 from the low. Well, excuse me, it's not over $400. It's a little less than $400 since the low. There's a short-term overbought condition. It's now testing the region of the November high, and it's above the trend mean. The big question is, when it pulls back, is it going to post a higher reaction low, ideally above $1,500, or is it even in the most almost ideal bullish scenario find support in the region of the trend mean? Amazon is a company that has been the abiding strategy over the course of the entire bull market has been to buy the dips, and it's not really until that strategy stops working that people are really going to start getting disillusioned with this bull market. Buying the dips has worked on every major pullback over the course of the last decade, so it is natural for people to think, well, golly, I wish that I had bought Amazon at $1,500 because it was recently at $2,000 and it's going to go straight back up there. That's the rationale that people will be using to buy it today. Well, if they're vindicated, then it's going to be even more difficult for those people to sell if it becomes even more overextended on the upside. If they're not vindicated, then it will represent the failure of what has been the most reliable trading strategy over the course of this entire bull market. And that's the kind of thing that will contribute to top formation development. So I think we are at a very important point here, because there is a realistic possibility that this medium-term bull market could potentially climax in a bubble. And if the Federal Reserve continues to pull back from tightening, then that is the potentially where the market is going to go. If they do continue to tighten, well, then they may avert a bubble, and we could move into a more volatile, lengthy, medium-term correction that could take a while to unfold. Either way, this is all happening in the context of a secular bull market that has probably got a long way to run between now and when it eventually climaxes, and that could potentially be more than a decade from now. When we look at, for example, Google, then the price is now above the trend mean, and it has bounced from that psychological $1,000 area. Well, the big question now is whether it is going to hold that $1,000 area. There is Google's Waymo is the leading autonomous vehicle platform, and some of the investment banks are attributing a $175 billion valuation to just that part of the company, and that's not reflected in Google's balance sheet at all. So there is the potential that it could do substantially better from here if it isn't broken up as a result of antitrust or doesn't face onerous regulation as a result of election tampering, which it didn't effectively police. Well, that there's definitely a market in Google with those kinds of diametrically opposed arguments. So that does suggest that there's going to be a period of support building. But then if we do start to see autonomous vehicles getting permissioned, well, there is the potential that it's going to do better from here. And I think that that is the kind of argument that's likely to form the basis of the second half of this secular bull market. The big question now, however, is the outlook for US treasuries and what we can expect from the market once it has unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean. So there are certainly, I think, improving potential here for a further rally through to the end of the year. And then I think probably a pause in terms of pricing in renewed risks of a trade war in the beginning of next year. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.